Texas Wine Time Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Wayne. I'm one of the swine vets here at the Pipestone Group and Pipestone Vet Services. I'm also one of the owners of Pipestone Holdings, and they let me do this one fun thing a few times a month is to interview people that I find interesting or that somebody along the way has thought would be really interesting for our listening audience, and I've got both because I think this guest today would be interesting to audience members as well as somebody that I really like. It's one of my peer would be me being very aspirational, but a peer of mine here who's kind of hitting the point where he's retiring, shifting gears, and wants to do something different, and it's Dr. Scott D., who most of our audience or all of our audience would know as the famous researcher that has helped understand our PERS situations a lot better over the years, whether it's filters or aerosol movement of PERS in the air or feed mitigants or just understanding how the virus moves around to begin with. So without talking more, I'll just turn it over to Scott. Scott, thanks for coming here. I really appreciate you taking some time.
My pleasure, Spencer. Always fun to spend time with you. And I do agree these podcasts are very valuable. I always listen to them. You do a great job of getting her up and rolling and keeping it going. So looking forward to this time.
Yeah. So today, for our listeners to understand right off the get-go, we're not going to talk about PERS, or at least not directly about PERS. We might refer to it, but this is not a technical podcast. This is going to be, we want to get to know Scott a little bit better. And the reason it came up was Scott and I and a bunch of other folks were in a meeting recently, and the rest of us were there because we needed to be there. Scott was there as an invited special speaker, and he was invited to talk to our group, really to be encouraging to us and to share parts of his life. And so it was a great talk. And I thought, Scott, that'd be awesome if you could come and share some of these points on the podcast to our listeners. So I'll turn it over to you if you want to kind of take it from there and start hitting some of these things. And there were 12 points that you covered before. Whether you want to hit all 12 or just kind of cherry pick the ones you think would be really insightful for the listeners, I'll turn that to you.
Okay, thanks. Well, the background for this, I will call it an honor. The invitation was an honor, and I've had a lot of honors in my career, but this one's right near the top, and it came from the top. It came from Dr. Joel Neerum, Hannah Wachus, and Dr. Adam Shelkoff, who asked me to take some time and think a little bit about the last 36 years of my career and what have I learned, and put it in context to the young vets in our business, and what could you tell our young veterinarians that would be helpful for them to, you know, just perhaps some mentoring, perhaps some good ideas, perhaps some inspiration, but just to kind of tell everybody kind of where I came from and what I think I got done, but obviously targeting the younger generation a bit.
Okay, I know where I want to start. Like Scott D., the kid that nobody said could go to vet school. start there, like, you can't do it, you'll never get in, or something along that lines was where the origination of the Scott D. backstory is.
Yeah, that's lesson number one is never surrender. And so I'm not from a farm. I came from Rochester, Minnesota. I had no agricultural history in my family or any veterinary medicine in my family. And I did get rejected twice from vet school at the University of Minnesota. So that kind of shapes you a little bit and puts a little bit of a chip on your shoulder, and you start getting voices in your head saying, well, people don't think you're very good. And so it starts to change kind of the way you look at the world a little bit. And it gets you probably a bit calloused to be told, basically from junior high school and college, I was told that I'm not smart enough to be a veterinarian. They actually told me I should be a doctor. Perfect. So yeah, it's true. Like, but that's where I get this first lesson is just don't give up whatever you do. If there's something you want to do it, just make sure you never let anybody tell you that you can't get that done.
Okay, good. And there's more I'd probably want to ask you about that, but for the sake of moving on, use all of your talents. And the things I know about you, I'll let you tell. But if you forget something, I'm going to jump in and bring it up because I know a few things you might not say, but go ahead.
Okay, good. So yeah, this, I think it was lesson number four is use your talents. And veterinary medicine is kind of perceived as only what I'll call left side of the brain, which is your scientific side. But actually, I have a very strong right side of the brain, which is your artistic side. And I think by putting those together, that's been able to help me design some creative experiments that have led to some helpful information like snowballs from hell and airborne transmission and feed and all that stuff. A lot of that came from the right side seeing something and asking the left side to design an experiment to try to figure it out. Okay. So, but I do have a very strong right side.
Yeah. So your right side of your brain, what is that? How does that get out of yourself? How does that express itself?
Well, it's the artistic side. For me, I'm a musician. So for 50 years, I've been a bass guitarist. And so I have a very strong musical side on my right side. And it just, I think it, what it does is, and I play the bass only by ear. I can't read any music. I've never had any lessons. And so I think what that shows is I've got somewhat of an imagination. And that imagination, letting that come out and look at questions, say, in the field, it just gives you a different way of looking at how would you answer that mm-hmm. question. And that's where the right side kicks over the left side and say, now you figure the experiment out. But that's, I think, how it all starts for me, is just looking at things in a very different creative way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. On the topic of your guitar, I've heard you play a few different times. Is that available anywhere for the listeners to type in Scott D bass guitar and watch a YouTube video you playing, or is that all not public? I don't know. I'm asking because it may be or maybe not.
Yeah, it's not a something I do on YouTube. I make videos for students. I have virtual students that call me up and say, hey, I can't figure this part out. Would you make a recording? And I'll make a recording of it just myself playing. They can see the where the fingers go. Yeah. And I'll send it to them. But I simply do it for fun. I don't do it for making money or anything. But
sure.
Yeah, I'm still a performing musician. Still.
What's the name of your band?
Well, it's my sister's band. It's called The Abiders. It plays in Minnetonka area a lot.
The rowdy roadhouses in Minnetonka.
That's my past. Yeah, that's the past. Yeah, there we go. We have a lot of stories there if you want to go down that road.
Yeah. Well, I would, but we probably wouldn't have time. What's other good ones down here? Remember your mentors.
This is very important. Because of the struggles I had to get into vet school and get started, I was really fortunate that I had a lot of good instructors and teachers along the way, people who gave me confidence, people who said, you can do this, you can do this, people who challenged me and really pushed me and made me better. And those kind of people are, for example, the late Al Lehman. Unfortunately, he's not here. Unfortunately, the late Carlos Bijuan isn't here no longer. The late Bob Morrison. Unfortunately, these people aren't here. And so you have to remember them. And you can never forget what they've done for you, because they've taken time from their busy days and really helped you succeed. Mm-hmm. So same to the young vets, as they grow and develop and get their careers going, there's going to be people who help each of them. And they just simply can't forget them. They have to remember them.
During your talk, you're saying, oh, here's my graduate students. And you got pictures of them. Very accomplished people that definitely benefited from your tutelage, your mentorship. So, like, I know what you're saying about the people that mentored you, but I would say it's kind of impressive to watch and think, man, they were Scott's student. That was Scott's student. That was Scott's student. You've done a great job with your students. I think most would agree.
Thank you.
Everybody would agree. Respect the press. That's an interesting one.
What do you think? Yeah. So there's that saying, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. But I twist that little bit and I say, if you don't know shit, nobody wants to know you. So you have to have something to say. And so if you've got something to say, we have a lot of good reporters in the swine industry who are interested in what we all have to say. And to respect the press, I think we should always think of them. If there's something you can deliver to them so they can broadcast it to their audience, it helps them out. And so there's several colleagues of mine in the news media that I contact regularly if there's a new paper coming out or a new study that's been completed. And I just take care of those people because they've always been really good to me and given me very good press. So that's kind of where that one comes from.
Yeah. And when you mentioned that one the other day, I thought, where did that one come from? But you've published so many papers, and you're more than most, you would be potentially in the media because you've got things to share. Mm-hmm. And so I never thought about that until you mentioned it, that they're really a part of, they extend you. And if you feed them right, they'll do good things for you.
Yes, it's one way you can get your word out without having to go everywhere and do it yourself. And I think that's a good thing. You know, one of the other points I raised was write it down. So publish things. And so to the young veterinarians, start publishing even simple case studies and things, because that way you get your name in the literature. It'll get recognized by these media folks, and you'll get a chance to just expand your network to a greater extent. So write it down was one of the are really important points. I look at publishing just like you're taking a chisel and you're chiseling something in stone. Because once you get something, and as you know, in the National Library of Medicine, it's there forever. Yeah. And so your name is always on that paper. And that's a great way to get started as a young veterinarian. That's how I got started with some of the original PERS work I published.
Can you toot your own horn a little bit and say how many papers you've published in peer-reviewed research journals? Or can you tell us, what have you done so far with your own personal library of publications? How many has that been?
Yeah, so a peer-reviewed paper is a scientific paper that, as you know, it gets sent out to reviewers and you don't know who they are, and they're critiquing your work, and there's usually three or four of them, and they come to, the editor receives their reports and comes to a consensus and says, yes, this can be published or not. So it's very, very, very challenging. And so that's like the gold standard of publishing. And to your question, I've had 181 of those so far in my career, and I'm going to continue a little bit down that road yet.
Do you know anybody that's published more?
Oh, I'm sure there are. I'm not sure. I don't really compare.
But. You don't go to the bar and say, how many have you published?
Hey, buddy, how many have you published? Yeah. No, it's quite a few, though. It's quite a few, I have to say. I don't know if I know anybody off the top of my head.
Yeah. I know for you, that's kind of a cool metric. Since I've known you, it's like, I got this many. You were always going for some next publication, and it was just like building up, building a monument almost.
Yeah.
That would be kind of.
Yeah. You know, one of the lessons was live your passion, and my passion has been PERS, as everybody knows, for 36 years, and that's been my contribution to the industry and to the veterinary profession, is to publish this information so everybody can read it. And, you know, the worst thing to do would be to write something and just sits on an old dusty bookshelf and no one ever pays any attention to it. So to get it out there and get people using it and see if it's got value, that's really what drives me. That's one of my main motivators in life.
Yeah. Change your behavior, change the world. Change behavior, not your behavior. Maybe your behavior, but change behavior, change the world. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think one of the things we should do as veterinarians is look for ways we can improve the lives, not only of animals, but people. And sometimes if we do something differently, if we change how humans behave, it makes it better for the industry. So one example is the feed risk that you're familiar with, where we've now learned primarily through Pipestone, as well as other universities, that feed is a very good vehicle for viruses to move around from farm to farm, but also from around the world. And one of the things that's come out of that is how we recognize feed now as a risk factor, which has never been done. How we consider bringing it in from other countries and quarantining it, almost like you would on breeding stock, that's never been done, and how mills and producers are using mitigants in the diets now to reduce viral survival. So none of that's ever been done. And so the science changed behavior, and it changed it to the better.
Speaking of behavior, not necessarily just behavior, but different people and different experiences you have that make you think differently. You grew up partly in Brazil, right? And you talked about some experiences you had there where you just saw parts of the culture that normally you wouldn't see because you went off and let it be known to yourself. You saw things because you found it. How did that change how you viewed people?
Yeah, so my dad was a big executive in IBM, and he actually took a transfer to Rio de Janeiro to run the purchasing department for South America for IBM. So big, big deal. And he took our family along. I was in college at the time, and I took a leave of absence and went there for 8 months, but my brother and sister lived there for 3.5 years. And I'd never, ever seen a third world country. At that time in my life, I was only 19 years old. I'd never been off the United States. And I learned about this place called the favelas, which are the slums, and they're up on the mountains in Rio. And when you fly in at night, you see all these beautiful lights on the mountains. Oh, this is like Disney World. But when you see it in the daytime, it's all these slums. Basically, it's just like a ghetto. And the worst one is called the Hocinha. And I'd never seen that before. And so I actually went up into the Hocinha. You never do that now. But I went up into the Hocinha, and I just watched what it was like. And it changed my life because I'd never seen poverty. I'd really never, ever seen poverty. And, you know, in the U.S., we've got such a wonderful life, and it's a kind of a normal bell-shaped curve with a middle class. And the countries like Brazil, it's all really wealthy or very poor. There's no middle class. And so it's very, very diverse. And just seeing those little kids running around in the mud streets with really no shoes with you know, basically skin and bones, having really nothing to eat, trying to rob me with their little knives, which I happily gave them some money just so they were okay. But I didn't mind that. But I felt so bad for them because what can I do? Well, here's a couple of cruzeros, right? And the old...
I like the way you make it sound cute. They tried to rob me with their little knives.
A little circle. Yeah, they made a little circle around me with little knives. But
all right.
There was no problem.
It says here, no pain, no gain.
Yeah, that's like another way of looking at that is you got to pay your dues to sing the blues. And I use this as a, you know, just as if you're going to be a veterinarian and you're going to make, you're going to really advance, you're going to make changes, you're going to run into adversity along the way. And you're going to get beat up every once in a while, be it by your colleagues or be it by the scientific community. And really, that's kind of what PERS did to me when I first came out of veterinary school in 87, where it was called mystery disease. Nobody knew what it was. And I was just this young vet. I couldn't do anything right. My clients were all getting the disease. I'd find them crying on the floor of their farrowing house with all the dead animals around them. And I'd go home every night to my little apartment all by myself, feeling like a total failure because I couldn't do anything about it. And we didn't even know what caused it at that time. But finally, I kind of got myself out of this depression because I said, if I didn't change and get better, I'm just going to crack up. It was literally almost ready to crack up. And so I decided I'm going to go back to graduate school, get my PhD, become a better scientist, and solve some of these problems. And by that time, you know, they'd figured out it was a virus and they called it PERS, and off we went. And so that's, you're going to get beat up every once in a while. So you just, like you say, no pain, no gain.
Okay, switch gears 180 degrees, have fun.
That's really important. You got to have fun in life because, you know, you only got one shot. I've had a wonderful life with my profession. I've been to many, many countries. I've met many, many friends. And I just love going to meetings and see all these people and reminiscing about some of the trips we've been on and stuff. You know what that's like. It's a lot of fun. And so you got to enjoy yourself because everyone works so hard. Got to make sure you let the other side live.
All right. Finish well. How do you do that?
Yeah. So that's like the ultimate goal. If you can leave your career like I'm doing now, feeling that you have accomplished what you want and feeling good about yourself and what you've done, that you've made an impact, that you've made the world a better place, even if it's the world or even if it's your neighborhood, if you've made an improvement in animals and humans' lives, you're going to finish well. So that way you're happy, you're comfortable with your results, you're not second-guessing yourself and, gosh, I should have done this, I should have done that. I'm at that point right now, Spencer, where I'm saying, all right, this has been a good run. I'm feeling good about myself.
Yeah, I can see you're a man in full, like you're perfect maturity through your career. It seems perfect to me anyway.
Thank you.
So a pretty good deal. So I'll wrap it up there. Scott, thank you very much for coming. You're the one guy that is so nice that you might secretly be evil because you're that nice.
But appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott.
Swine Time Podcast was created for the pork industry and individual pork producers around the country. Hosted by me, Dr. Spencer Wayne, with the Pipestone Veterinary Services. The podcast contains pork industry news, advancements in animal care, and how to enhance your productivity. Monthly podcasts are available on Spotify, Google Music, iTunes, Anchor, and on www.pipestone.com.